Hello, this is Dangerous Minds, and I am Richard Metzger. My guest today is the author of 13 books with titles like Endgame and As the World Burns. He is one of the most profoundly confrontational thinkers that I have encountered personally in the past decade. The Utney Reader has hailed him as the green thinker and writer who's out to tell us not what we want to hear, but what we need to hear. Joining me today from his home in Northern California is Derek Jensen. Derek, hello.
Hey, thank you for having me.
It's great to see you. So last night, as I was preparing my questions for this, I was struggling with the idea of how to begin. And I always feel that my job, you know, as an interviewer, is to try to get the audience on the side of the interviewee. And so I've tried to come up with a list of questions that might help to lead someone who's new to your work to have the same kind of aha moment that I had. But I want to be upfront about that. It wasn't really a pleasant aha moment. It was something like being kicked in the stomach. It was not a pleasant epiphany, I guess is the way to put it. And I was depressed for days, and then I became exhilarated because I think I was able to leave something unnecessary behind. And that said, you don't see that there's much to be hopeful on the horizon. Your views on the environment are pretty darkly pessimistic, and I would imagine that this might initially, at first, turn off some people. In one of your lectures that I listened to online, you say that the best way to get someone to agree with you is to find a way to slip in the explicit premises of your work at the very beginning. So let's start there, shall we? What are the explicit premises of your work, Derek?
Well, a couple things. One is that there probably are people who are turned off by my work, and I certainly hear from some of them, but there are a lot more people who are really delighted. And I get so many notes from people saying, thank you so much. I thought I was the only person who thought that this culture is crazy, but now I understand that there are a lot of people who understand that the culture is crazy. And so that's the first thing. And the second thing is that I don't quite say so much that the best way to get someone to agree with you is to find a way to slip in premises, but instead what I say is that one of the first rules of propaganda is if you can slide your premises by people, you've got them. And I don't want to do that, and so at least in Endgame, I state the premises pretty explicitly up front. For example, this culture is not and will not ever be sustainable, and we won't have a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living. And if we're not going to have a voluntary transformation, what does that mean for our strategy and for our tactics? And the answer, we don't really know because we don't really talk about it. One of the reasons we don't talk about it is because we're all so busy pretending that there will be this magical transformation that we all know is not going to happen. So I want to back off a second. Sort of, what's the basics of my work? It really starts with the understanding that this culture is killing the planet. And, you know, 90% of the large fish in the oceans are gone. The dominant culture arrived where I live now in far northern California on Talawa Indian land, arrived here about 180 years ago. And there were so many salmon that you couldn't see the bottom of rivers. And there was no pollution. And there was no such thing as old growth because it was all old growth. It was just home. And in the last 180 years, the place has gotten hammered by the dominant culture. And it does this everywhere. So that's really the basis for it is what for my work is, you know, the culture is killing the planet, and what are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not a very hopeful statement, I guess. So do you find that hope is overrated in our culture?
Well, there's two parts to that. One is that it's like a doctor friend of mine says that the first step toward cure is proper diagnosis. And we need to be honest about our current situation if we're going to do anything about it. And you know, once again, 90% of the large fish in the oceans are gone. There is at least 10 times as much plastic as phytoplankton in the oceans. And that's troublesome. And yet what we hear about is that Michael Jackson just died. Or we hear that Walter Cronkite just died. And we hear all this stuff that on a global scale is not really that important. I know earlier that the Yankees were beating the Tigers 2-1 in about the sixth or seventh. You know, there's more people attend to the Detroit Tigers than attend to real Tigers. That's crazy.
You are often called an anarcho-primitivist. What does that mean in plain terms?
What people call me in general, what boxes they put on me, what I know is that I want to live in a world that has more wild salmon every year than the year before. And I want to live in a world that has more migratory songbirds every year than the year before. And I want to live in a world where there's less dioxin in every mother's breast milk every year than the year before. And I want to live in a world that's not being destroyed by global warming. And I want to live in a world that has living oceans. And I'll do what it takes to get there. And if that means I'm an anarcho-primitivist, then that's fine.
Right. So people are encouraged to use low-power bulbs, drive less, recycle, use showerhead restrictors, and all of this. But in your work, you contrast the personal with the political solutions when it comes to saving the environment. Would you elaborate on that, please?
The personal and the political are deeply connected. And, you know, you have 25% of all women in this culture are raped in their lifetimes. Another 19% fend off rape attempts. And all the women I know say that those figures are actually very low. And there's the routine objectification of women. There's the routine, in many movies, you'll see the standard rape fantasy in, on the waterfront. Straw Dogs, Dr. Zhivago, V for Vendetta, they all have scenes where women are tortured and then end up loving their torturer. Dr. Zhivago, at the beginning of the rape scene, she's pushing him away, and by the end, she's pulling him close. And my point is that how you perceive the world affects how you behave in the world. And there's a great line by a Canadian lumberman, "When I look at trees, I see dollar bills." And if when you look at trees, you see dollar bills, you're going to treat them one way. If when you look at trees, you see trees, you'll treat them another way. If when you look at this particular tree, you see this particular tree, you'll treat it differently still. The same is true for women. If when I look at women, I see orifices, I'm going to treat them one way. If when I look at women, I see women, I'll treat them another way. If when I look at this particular woman, I see this particular woman, I'll treat her differently still. So that's all how it's all interconnected. But then, having said that, now really to your question, that we've been handed a real con job by capitalism, many con jobs. And one of them is, in the 1980s was the first time that human beings were referred to by corporate newspapers more often as consumers than as citizens. And if they can get you to accept that redefinition of yourself, then you will come to see your choices as consumer choices. I can make social change by consuming or not consuming. But citizens have a much wider range of resistance than do consumers. Consumers, once again, can buy or not buy. Citizens can vote, they can not vote, they can boycott, they can organize, they can protest. And when a government becomes destructive of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they have the right to alter or abolish it. And there's another change that we went through several thousand years ago that was just as striking and startling and dislocating, which was the transformation from human animals who need community into citizens of a state. And one of the bargains when we become citizens of a state is that we grant the state a monopoly on violence. And human animals who need community will fight back if their habitat is destroyed and if their family is poisoned, if their family is killed. And so tying back to the original question, personal change does not equal social change, and nobody in their right mind would think that that buying or not buying would have stopped apartheid or would have stopped Hitler, and nobody would think that composting would have stopped Tsarist Russia. And yet when we're faced with the murder of the planet, all of a sudden we get really stupid. I mean, if space aliens had come down from outer space and they were vacuuming the oceans and changing the climate and putting docks in every mother's breast milk, we would know what to do. And it wouldn't be to just, you know, not buy from corporations that have one of the aliens as a CEO. So my point really has to do with organizing and with not searching for purely personal solutions to problems that are social.
Here's a quote from one of your books. "The central and in many ways only question of our time is this: what are sane, appropriate, and effective responses to outrageously destructive behavior?" How do you answer that for your readers?
What I can say is that the industrial economy is killing the planet, and we need to shut down the industrial economy using any means necessary, because there is nothing more important than a living planet. The people who come after are not going to care whether we voted. They're not going to care whether we were violent or nonviolent. They're not going to care if we were nice people. They're not going to care if we recycled. They're not going to care whether we wrote books. They're not going to care whether we did interview programs. What they're going to care about is the health of the planet. They're going to care about whether they can breathe the air and drink the water. Because we can all have some great fantasy about how we want things to be in the future. And if you can't breathe the air and drink the water, it doesn't matter. Because that's the basis. And this is something that we often forget, is that the real world is the real world. And you can't have any social structure whatsoever without a real physical world. And there's this absolute insanity that is almost ubiquitous in this culture that suggests that the dominant culture is more important than the real world. And that's a stunning comment. So how do we respond to outrageously destructive behavior? It depends on the circumstances. But the bottom line is, you stop that outrageously destructive behavior using whatever means are necessary.